I brought with me this evening something to show you. It is my number one enemy at this time of the year. I do battle with it. I think I'm not the only one. You can spend whole evenings sometimes battling with it. It looks pretty harmless, but it isn't. Here it is, a roll of sellotape. Have you come into combat with one of these? You can spend what seems like hours trying to find the little bit that you're supposed to find to get the sellotape off. And even if you do find it, you then find that it just kind of unrolls around it in a sort of diagonal line until you've almost got to the end of the roll. And then Christmas Day arrives and you go to unwrap your present and you find your well-meaning auntie has used several rolls of sellotape to keep it all in place. And at first it's kind of mildly amusing that you're trying to get into it and you can't. And then it gets to be quite annoying. And then just a bit embarrassing. You know, the children are laughing and rolling around. Why can't this grown man get into his own present? And I tell you all of this partly just to get it off my chest. You know, it's cathartic to have a bit of a grumble and tell you about my frustrations. But also because for so many people, and this is where I'm going to move into some quite bad puns, so you might want to get ready to groan at this point. This is where so many people find that the Christmas message is like that. No matter how hard they try, they just can't get into it. And so what I want to do is look at some of the sticking points together and see that the Christmas message holds everything together. Thank you for your appreciative groans. The best way to unwrap Christmas, the best way to make sense of the Christmas message, to see what it says to us and why it's important today, is to look more closely at those Christmas Bible readings that we've just been listening to. And I want us to look at just a couple of sentences this evening. Here they are up on the screen. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. Jesus is given a name. He's given the name Emmanuel, and we're told that that word Emmanuel means very simply God with us. I'm going to unwrap the Christmas message for us by talking about those three words, God, with, and us. Let's start with the word God. God. Jesus is called God with us because he turns out to be the God of our universe, the creator of the whole world, come to live the life of a human being, to be a real person of flesh and blood, just like you and me, in our history. What better way for God to show himself to human beings than to become one of us? This is a picture of Colonel James Irwin. He was the eighth person to walk on the moon back in 1971. And he said this. He said, what matters most of all, the greatest and most important thing, is not that man walked on the moon, but that God walked on earth. Now, a lot of people struggle with the whole idea of God. How can we know? How do we know that there is a God? Or if there is a God, what God? Which of the different gods that people seem to believe in? Is it just a question of personal opinion? Is it all about faith and not facts? Is it just something you can choose for yourself? How can we ever know? But if Jesus is called God with us, then God is no longer up there beyond our reach, unknowable. He's down here in our world. He is his facts on the ground rather than mystery and faith. Whatever you think of Jesus Christ, he is a part of human history. Whether you believe in him or not, whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, there's no avoiding it. You can check it with any suitably qualified historian and they will confirm it, that Jesus Christ lived in this world at a particular time, at a particular place, and we have quite a lot of information that we know about this real person in history, Jesus Christ. So we can debate and discuss different views and different ideas about God and religion and find that no two people would ever agree, and it's very hard to be sure, but Jesus is more definite, more concrete. We can look at what he said. Did he seem to have the answers? Was he able to make sense of our world and explain why we're here and what's going on and what it all means? Was he persuasive and convincing? We can look at what he did. Did he do things that only God could do? Were there miracles? Was there something supernatural about him? Is there good reason to believe that those sorts of things really happened in the story of Jesus Christ, in the events of Jesus Christ? What about Jesus coming back from the dead? Is there any way to know whether that happened? Did they see him? Does it stand up to research and investigation? Now, some people say, well, back in those days, they were just more superstitious than we are today. They couldn't explain things with science, so they made up legends and myths. But that's not actually how it happens in the Bible readings that we heard just now. Joseph actually didn't believe in the virgin birth at all, not at first. When Mary said she was having a baby, he knew the baby wasn't his. He wanted to cancel the wedding. He thought, well, she must have been cheating on me. Who is this other guy? You see, even in those days, they knew where babies came from. They were able to work that out. They didn't need the advanced technology that we have today or modern science to work out what was going on there. He knew this wasn't possible, and he wasn't easy to persuade. And yet Joseph is just one of many, many people in that generation who became convinced about Jesus Christ. So many people became convinced by what he said and what he did and what they saw and what they heard that Christianity became a global movement within that generation. And that needs some sort of explanation. How could that have happened? They realized, that first generation realized that what they had seen in Jesus Christ was so important that they needed to keep the evidence for future generations. As the eyewitnesses started to die out, they made sure that they kept their letters, that they kept accounts of what they'd seen and what had happened, and they wrote it all down and they collected it together in a book that has become known as the Bible. And we still have that evidence to look at today. So here's part of the great news. Here's the great thing about Christmas. It means that we can actually know God. We can find out whether he's real. We can discover what he's like. We know where to look to find the answer to that question. We can look at Jesus and everything we know about Jesus and his life and his story. So that's the first word I wanted us to think about, the word God. And the second word is the word with. The word with. God with us. How can God be with people like us? How is that possible? It was a big problem at the time for Joseph and Mary and their people. You see, they had a temple. They had a sort of symbol of God's presence in the world. But people were shut out. You weren't allowed into the temple. Hardly anyone was allowed into the temple. If you were allowed, you weren't allowed into the place where God, the symbol of God's presence. You were kept away, kept at a distance, not allowed. And that's because they believe that God is pure and fair and right, and that he won't have anything to do with anything that is not perfect and not pure and not right, and that human beings are not like God. And he distances himself from anything that is evil or wrong. He burns with a fierce passion for justice. They called God a consuming fire. And they said, if you get too close to that God, you get what you deserve. And that is something terrifying, as they described it. And so it is amazing to hear that Jesus is God with us. Not just at his birth, not just at Christmas, that's only the start of the story. It's about his death, it's about Easter. It's about Jesus killed on a cross so that God can be with us. At the very moment that Jesus dies on a cross, that curtain that separates people from the presence of God, that curtain in the temple, the barrier, the no entry sign, is destroyed. It is torn in two so that God can be with people. And there can be a relationship between God and human beings. God can be with us because Jesus died. And if I can explain that a little bit like this, it's because that, yes, it's true, God is fair and just. He has high standards. We don't live up to them. But he's also loving and forgiving, and he longs to know us. And God says, look, let me be the one to die and not you. Treat me as if I were the one who had done wrong. Treat me as if I were the criminal. Let me be executed as if I've committed crimes that in fact you've committed. And I will die instead of you so that you can be forgiven so that God can be with you. Now, we still need that forgiveness today. Human nature is still pretty messed up. If you don't believe me, just watch a bit of daytime reality TV. As you probably know, my job is to be a vicar, and people often politely ask me, well, I can see what you do on Sunday, but what do you do with the rest of your week? Do you have anything that you can do? And so I'm kind of falling into that stereotype now by admitting that I have seen a few daytime TV programs, and I wouldn't encourage you to watch them as well, because you watch them and you see a bit about human nature. You know, these people come on and the talk show host is there, and you find out what these people have been doing to each other and how they've cheated on each other and lied. And there's a lot of shouting, a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling. It almost makes me wish I did have a proper job so that I wouldn't be able to watch these things in the middle of the day. This week I watched a really unpleasant row developing. There was a room full of people. They were all shouting and jeering at each other. And one after another, they got up and they were furious. You may have seen it as well. The Prime Minister was there, the Leader of the Opposition, the whole House of Parliament were there. One BBC sign language sort of captured the public mood perfectly as she translated the news about the Brexit debate. And I had to show you a picture of that. Perhaps you can relate to that. Perhaps that's how you and I feel as we watch all this sort of thing happening. But before we get too frustrated with them, we ought to remember that we actually elected them. We couldn't find anyone better to represent us, to choose from among us and say, right, you lead us. You're the best representatives that we have. You take charge. And I guess that tells us something about human nature, doesn't it? I wonder if there is politics where you work and what that's like. I wonder if there are arguments where you live. I wonder what happens behind closed doors. I don't see it. I know what happens behind our closed doors. God sees it. He knows it. He knows who we really are. He knows us better than we know ourselves. And yet he longs to be with us. Despite all of that, he says, look, I will suffer the consequences. I would rather die than miss out on being with you. I want you to be with me in this life, to have a relationship with me, to know me. I want you to be with me in the next life, to have eternal life. God with us. That is part of the good news of Christmas. God with us. That's the second word, with. God with. And then thirdly, the word us. Us. Jesus is God with us, but who is us? Which people? Who is God with? Is he with all of humanity? All people, inevitably? That's not actually what it says. That's not what the messenger said to Joseph. It's not what we read in the Bible a moment ago. The Bible talks about Jesus saving his people. If God is with us, if Jesus is God with us, then in order for God to be with you, you really need Jesus to be with you. But Jesus is not willing to be with you unless you are willing to have him. He's not going to force himself on anyone unless we welcome him and receive him. Now, the story of Jesus continues from the birth of Jesus in Matthew's account, which we read from. It continues and you read more about his life, and he's with people that you would not expect him to be with. He's with people who come from other religions and other backgrounds and lots of different cultures and groups. He's with people who've never really heard of God or thought about God before. He's with people who have lived a life that they are maybe not proud of. And they know they've got things wrong. People who have cheated and lied and stolen, and people who make money out of selling sex. And yet these people receive Jesus, and he is glad to be with them and happy to be welcomed by them. So much so that he even promises to give them his spirit, for his Holy Spirit, his presence, to be with them and in them and in their lives and in their hearts and in their minds, so that they're never alone and so that they have what they need to be able to change, to be able to come more like Jesus, little by little. There are other people, though, in Matthew's account of Jesus, other people who don't want Jesus to be with them at all. They reject Jesus. They push him away. They are people who think that they are okay without help. They tell themselves, look, I'm a good person. I'm managing my life just fine. as I am. I don't know what's going to happen at the end of my life, but I'm sure it'll be okay. I'm sure I'll cope. They sort of pretend that they can fix everything if they just try hard enough to be a good person. They don't see that they need to be forgiven. Well, I wonder what the Christmas message means to you. Jesus, God with us, Emmanuel. I wonder whether that word means something. I'm sure it does mean something to many people here. You might have heard about a Cambridge student who didn't want to go to a college that had anything to do with Christianity. So he was very careful not to apply to Jesus College or Christ College or Corpus Christi College. He didn't like the names of those colleges. He realized he ought to rule out Trinity College and Trinity Hall. After a while, he decided it would be a bad idea to go to the College of St. Mary Magdalene, or to St. John's, or St. Catherine's, or St. Edmund's. And in the end, he decided he'd better go to Emmanuel College. That should be safe, he thought, because surely Emmanuel has nothing to do with Christianity at all. Well, he was wrong about that. He should have applied maybe to Darwin. That would have been okay. But Emmanuel is everything to do with Christianity, and not something to avoid or push away, but something to explore and look into. It was great to hear John Percival earlier telling his story, telling about how he went to university to do maths, and he wanted to know, does this add up? Are there good reasons to believe? Well, that's a great approach to have. And some people say, well, the whole idea of God seems distant and far away and remote. At worst, something that's been made up by other people. At best, something that doesn't seem relevant to everyday real life. But the Christmas message is so different from that, isn't it? The Christmas message is God with us. It's about God showing himself in our world so we can know he's real and know what he's like. God with us, dying for us so we can be forgiven, so we can have God with us in this life and the next forever. It's about God with us, with anyone and everyone who is willing to receive and welcome Jesus into our lives. Well, we love to help people explore Christianity. We love it that you've come to join in with our Christmas celebration today, and we'd welcome people to do that at any point. I actually do have a bit of time in the week, as I've mentioned. I'm often free. You could save me from daytime TV. I love to sit down with people and open up the Bible and deal with questions and objections and issues that people raise. And there are lots of other people at St. Matthew's who enjoy doing that as well. It is such a good message that it is worth unwrapping, not getting stuck with it, and looking into it. The best news of all. Because it's a wonderful moment when God with us becomes God with me. Or God with you.